If you're an RIA or looking to become one, Schwab Advisor Services is the Watson to your homes. Smart, dependable, always has your back. It's no mystery why they're the number one choice for RIAs who want to be the ultimate solution for their clients. With all the wealth services, technology, and support your firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Follow the clues at schwabvious.com.
It's the Red Tag Sales Event at Jeff Weiler Chevrolet of Columbus. Look for the red tags and unlock unbeatable discounts on new and pre-owned Chevys. 0% APR on select new Chevrolet for well-qualified buyers. From the rugged Silverado to the sleek Malibu, every tag means savings. Financing made easy. We'll pay off your trade no matter what you owe. Stop by Jeff Weiler Chevrolet on Gender Road or shop anytime at jeffweilercolumbus.com. That's jeffweilercolumbus.com.
A t-shirt and jeans, mac and cheese, oceans and sunsets. Some things in life are an obvious match, like RIAs and Schwab Advisor Services, the number one choice for independent advisors looking for a custodian who can help them go further. With all the wealth services, technology, and support an RIA firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Find your match and learn why custody is just the beginning at schwabvious.com.
Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacy Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We're digging into the case against Brian, not just against Brian Koberger, but now a new case that has erupted out of this. And this is a case of the Gonzalez family going against WSU, where Brian Koberger was the teaching assistant. They are arguing and they are saying, hey, you know what? There was a lot of warning signs here. Why didn't you act sooner? Why was this guy allowed to basically fester and hang out as long as he did before they finally called it quits with him? Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, with us as we are breaking it down. Let's talk about the escalation a bit. I mean, WSU did have meetings. They had documentation. They had warnings. So they ultimately did fire him as a TA. But some of those documentation, some of those complaints, do we need a system that doesn't that handles certain complaints with more seriousness and with a different, I don't know, different perspective, a different level of observation than others? Because it seems some of these, especially when you see a pattern of them, of the misogynistic behavior, of the disrespect towards women, of the harsher grading towards women. I mean, these number one, if you get just one kind of standalone, this is weird. Okay, well, let's see if this is a pattern. Clearly, mm-hmm. It became a pattern very quickly. When they start identifying patterns like that, when an institution starts seeing patterns like this of behavior in someone that we know is just broken behavior, it's not going to be changed. This is pathological type behavior. If this is in your mind, if you're going to act like this towards women, there's no meeting, there's no video you're going to watch, there's no training you're going to get that's going to make you a different human being. But yet we seem to think that, well, if we follow these these paths, legally binding paths that say we did this, then we're covered at least, and hopefully they're going to somehow magically change. There seems to be a level of magical thinking with some HR departments and the legal community in how we handle people like this, where we give them too many passes and too many chances. And a lot of it, it's fear-based. It's to cover institutions' butt from a lawsuit of them suing for being fired prematurely or for not good enough cause. But do we need something more? And maybe it is something that needs to be litigated where, look, if you're crossing these lines over here, it's just you're done. You're out. You've shown a pattern here. We don't need to see what the aftermath is going to be because we know where this is all going to end at some point in time. Should there just be more of a zero tolerance type policy to this sort of behavior and less chances given over and over and over to anyone, autistic or not? Either you're going to follow these things or you're not. Because at the end of the day, you're making all these people uncomfortable. You're making them feel unsafe. And sorry, once you got a pattern and you're proving it, we just don't have time for you anymore.
Yeah, I think having someone objective do the observing, report early. And again, I don't think WSU did anything necessarily wrong. Again, their tempo was just way too slow because they did have that fear factor. But, you know, I don't think this. So here's what's black and white to me. It's not the observed behavior necessarily, because there's a lot of people that are on spectrums or just have inappropriate learned behavior earlier in life. I think that the how you treat women is, like you said, you know, that's kind of a pattern which you're not going to get over anytime too fast because that happens earlier.
It's pathology.
It really is.
Yeah.
But to this entire thing is, again, I think the easier measure to do on this is to measure if you can just say, get out, we're done with you, or we can work with you, is that humility factor. You know, there is actually testing you can do to actually test. You can give this guy, you know, an EQ test to see where he functions on the level of EQ. Mm-hmm. If someone's got a bottomed out emotional intelligence and you baseline them coming in, whether you want to do it objectively through assessment or you want to do it subjectively just through observation, there's a way you can actually measure people's EQ, especially their emotional intelligence, their problem solving ability, their emotional regulation, their knowledge of self and knowledge of others. And if they're bottoming out on all those things and you're going to be in front of students, that's concerning. And grant, ethically, you can't use these things. Or you can use things. Again, you got to go through the legal thing, because I'm going pragmatically about dealing with both ideal world as well as how systems organize and work. But you can then baseline, hey, here's where he was coming in. Here's where we are today when the first offense is, or the second or third offense. Are we still bottom lined, or are we getting better? Because if you don't have a measure of someone getting better, that's when you boot them. Because why aren't they getting better? Why do people not get better at something in life? The only time people don't get better at something is when you lack humility. When you don't have the ability to say, okay, I'm working on this. Here's what I need to do about it. You're going to stay flat. So in other words, if I observe you doing something once, twice, or three times a certain way, and you don't have humility, the likelihood of you doing exactly the same way for the rest of your life until you get that humility is almost 100. That's just science.
Do you think they could have basically stopped Koberger from coming in to begin with had they done some more tests, had they done some more personality tests to determine whether he would be a good fit for being a teaching assistant, rather than just, well, you've gotten this far along in your career, this is the next step towards your degree and where you're going, so naturally you're going to fit in here? Should we have more of that? Should we be testing people more in different ways for the areas to which we expect them to excel at or to participate in or lead? Because I'm going to guess there probably wasn't any, I don't know, or much in terms of identifying what kind of a human being you're getting here into this position, other than just here's his academic accomplishments.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't. I mean, I keep preaching on this show all the time. I'm a big believer in EQ, emotional intelligence factor, just because, I mean, and why? Well, because every time I'm dealing with someone that is really off in life, really unhealthy. What makes someone unhealthy? Their emotional intelligence is really friggin' low.
Yeah.
So it really comes down to that. Now, can you use these things legally as an ethical standard for hiring or firing or any type of position? No, but it should definitely be an input into your decision-making process. And if you're going to be in front of people, if you're going to be dealing with the public, if you're going to especially be trying to impart knowledge on students, large numbers of students, you've got to at least be at a certain level of emotional intelligence, especially if you're going to be in teaching. You have to have a level of humility, because if, think about this. If you are actually supposed to be a PhD student, aren't you supposed to have the ability to learn? But if your emotional intelligence, your humility, your knowledge of self is so low that you actually think you're smarter than everyone else, as everyone kept saying he was, how really effective can you be? I mean, so I just, nah.
Well, he wasn't able to self-reflect, it didn't seem.
Zero. Well, see,
at all.
Incapable. Incapable. He wasn't wired for it. His brain was not wired for it. I mean, so think about it. Does a wolf self-reflect?
Well, and I got to ask, and I wonder this too, and this is part of the HR process that they were going through that eventually did get him fired, but they're looking at it from a liability perspective.
Right.
They're not looking at it as we're, you know, threat assessment perspective.
Right.
I mean, at least that's my take on it. And that's how most HR is. It's based on liability. What kind of liability does this person present to your organization? And, you know, what are we weighing here versus getting rid of him versus keeping him versus all of that? And eventually the tables turn to where they had to get rid of him. But is that approach in itself just not that effective? Is that something that needs to be kind of retooled a little bit and not think that because we're operating from a liability perspective that anyone is actually having any sort of meaningful intervention with a character like this? When you're writing someone up, when you're slapping their wrist, you need to do better at this, Brian. I mean, it's the equivalent of almost saying to a blind person, you need to start seeing better. Well, if they can't see to begin with, all the encouragement in the world and all the scolding and writing up isn't going to change that. It's more so we need to accept people more so for who they are and what they are. And if that person is just a shitty human being or is damaged in some way, shape, or form that presents a threat to others, we need to call that out. We can't pretend that it's not there for fear of upsetting someone or them or their rights or this or that. He clearly, I think, had any sort of microscope looked at him other than just his educational accomplishments, others would have seen this.
So and I've seen this. I mean, this goes across every organization. You know, me and the FBI, yeah. I faced, government employees. You think getting rid of Coburg is hard? Try to get rid of a government employee.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I was surrounded, but I actually saw it.
Yeah.
There was like one glaring instance in my career that I worked for a guy that was doing some decent harm, in a sense that he was misogynistic, didn't think he was, and he was saying some really inappropriate things and hurting careers. And my boss's boss caught wind of it. And I've never, ever seen anyone fired, misplaced, or anything like that. She caught wind of this thing, and she canceled a major trip, a major talk, and she showed up, took a climate survey, interviewed everyone, and the next day, the guy was moved.
Good.
I was like, holy F.
That's how it's done, though.
It really is. And so, you know, so now speaking to this situation, and so how did she do that? And so this is what, and we haven't done this quite here yet either, because everyone keeps talking about Coburg. He's creepy. He's this. You're not going to get anywhere with backing when you keep poking at him. What a leader does in these situations is, all right, here's this guy's behavior, you know, right, wrong, indifference. He'll claim he can be fixed. Lawyers can claim the same. But here's where it impacts. This is what leaders do. Leaders keep a very clear understanding of what the mission is. The mission is creating a safe environment to educate the students. And so you take that and you then interview everyone in those classes that are being negatively affected by that behavior. Now the leader can then say, listen, we have an unhealthy, unsustainable, unsafe environment for learning because of this guy. Because this, now we have, instead of just poking at the one data point of creepy guy, you now have hundreds of data points saying that this is negatively affecting our mission statement, and it's much easier for lawyers, for everyone. And also, lawyers, you know, these things are mitigated a lot of times when it's reasonable. So a reasonable person in this situation, if you're going after someone with autism, which is having a hard time communicating, and that's what your focus is, a reasonable person is like, huh, you got to give him another chance. See, but see what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everyone's so focused so much on him that they didn't look at the impact it was having on everyone else.
Exactly. In other words, it's like a spider web.
Yeah, they weren't looking at the victims. So if they actually focused on the victims, and not just the four girls, but before them, the victims that of all the people that were subjected to Koberger, got data points on those, papered the files with that, now you can say, hey, we need to remove him. And you're completely justified, because now you have stacks and stacks and stacks of reams of all these people talking about how what he's doing, the effect he's having, which is completely incongruent with the mission statement of the department, of the university, and of learning.
There it is. So we need better leaders. We need people who are self-reflective and saying, you know what? Your behavior is impacting all of these people. Either you shape up or we're done. Case closed. We do it in our personal lives. Why can't that be expected in our professional lives?
Because they were given him, and this is where I've said this before too, I commend the kindness of the people that gave him a lot of grace.
Right.
But here's the problem. They gave him grace, but where was the grace for everyone's being impacted by him? So what they needed to do, this is what leaders do. Leaders shift the focus from where it shouldn't be to where it should be. Victims. Everyone was being victimized by him, but they're giving him all the leeway. No, no, no. We got to focus on all the victims before the tragic victims came about. So that's what I think the focus should be. And that's where, because I've seen people do this, but it takes the leader to know how to direct the resources, how to direct the conversation. Because this is what leaders do. Leaders solve problems. They create a safe environment and the resources for the success of others. And the way they do that is by creating that safe environment. And you do that by mitigating one cancer because you're focusing on the healthy body, because that's what the mission is.
I'm sensing a seminar here that you need to put together how to train people to be good leaders.
And I love that. The reality in a lot of it, though, it comes back then to the liability of – okay, well, if you're going to do this way, then expect that, you know, you're going to get a lot of pushback over here too. It's something that we see early in education. I mean, I witnessed this in my own child's education, where there is a lot of defending. There's a lot of making excuses for. There's a lot of not holding accountable. Extremely disruptive students, students that seem to really have no desire to be there or do much of anything. Probably come from not the best of home life, and that's not great. But at the same point, at the expense of other students and their own learning and their own education, because they don't want to rock the boat with the one that's very disruptive or causes the problems. It's more so, well, let's find a way to just kind of keep this at bay over here. And then the second one of the kids who is actively trying to learn speaks up or says something, those are the ones that get called out. You can't do that. You gotta temper that back. It's like, how about we get this in control over here and not go after the group over here? And when you start doing that very young ages, you start teaching kids, well, this is how this structure works. And it doesn't really ever solve anything. And then you have a structure of the people who are making the decisions, making poor decisions, just like the small children will be making poor decisions and stepping in or not stepping in at the right points in time. So we have a really weird dynamic of where we prioritize where we're going to put effort and where we're not going to put effort and who is worth that time and that effort versus who is not worth that time and that effort. And it seems very off in terms of the people who are begging for the attention and begging for the instruction and begging for all of that versus the ones who are not. And we seem to really, in our education system in the U.S. publicly, we put a lot on trying to get the kids who really don't give a shit to give a shit at the expense of ignoring the ones who do give a shit. And eventually they just kind of walk away going, well, they didn't really give a shit about me.
I think the pendulum swung too far in the opposite direction.
Yes.
We need to be right in the middle. And we've been on both ends of the spectrum here. We need to come back to center. And we need to care for somebody like a Brian Koberger in the beginning, but we also need to care about the people he's affecting. And yeah, you guys are 100% right. Yeah.
It feels that we've stopped caring about the people that are being affected Correct. By the disruptors.
Yeah.
It's just collateral damage. And the institutions are more concerned about being sued by the disruptors or the legal consequences of how they're going to handle the disruptor versus the damage that the disruptor is creating over here.
And so here's, I know we keep thinking about the suing aspect and a legal aspect, and that's definitely a factor. But when you actually then, so say, again, here's our hypothetical thought experiment. So when you have actually a healthy environment like a university or a school system that actually is trying to mitigate a Brian Koberger, not as a killer, but as, you know, someone who can't communicate well and he's just an ass.
Yeah.
When you're having these conversation discussions early on, one thing that you do is you include the parents, you include guardians, yes. you include people in these people's lives to see what they're doing. So because part of this process then also is understanding that letting them know, listen, here's the cause and effect of behavior. And then they're aware of it. It's in writing. And so it mitigates this legal side because also, because lawyers are always part of these conversations anyway, they will actually see, hey, everyone's being reasonable. They're the unreasonable ones. And also the likelihood of disinterested parents or parents that aren't even there, the likelihood of lawsuits for you taking action on the benefit of a greater whole is so much lower. And it's not going to go anywhere because I do this all the time when I'm working with family members or my own life or anyone. You know, and granted, we're a little jaded because we keep seeing bad court systems on a lot of these cases. Right. But in general, courts are reasonable. And what you have to demonstrate all the time is the reasonableness of the action that you're taking for the benefit of the stated benefit in writing of universities, of organizations, institutions. You then have to show the reasonable effort you went through to mitigate, to do all these things. All these things take bandwidth. They take energy. But what happens is you take that bandwidth and energy once, twice, or three times, the people then see, I don't even bother. Because look, they have a process, they have a procedure in place. And so you set that standard. And so what are we doing now? We're now leading because you're setting that standard. All it takes is one really great example, really great case to see the method, to see the routine, to see the process, to see the procedure. All the time is you're taking written rules and policies. You're having no fear to enact them and no fear of legalese either, because when you're taking reasonable action for the greater benefit of others and you're given reasonable accommodation, so it's always reasonable accommodation for someone to change their pattern of behavior and they're not taking it, that's on them. That's their behavior. So they're causing a cause and effect by their – well, I'm not making the choice. They are making the choice by their behavior being incongruent with what we said, what we counseled, what we stated in the policy.
Yeah,
it's laborious, obviously, what I'm saying, but it actually is step by step, very clear, very reasonable. But what's it take? It doesn't take hand wringers, because when you start doing the hand wringing of fear, no one's going to take action. One leader at the top, ready to fall on the sword if they have to. You know, I'm watching inside the bureau, this high executive. I'm like, wow, are they going to get sued? This is a big deal. And they're going after a power broker here. I mean, they're removing another power broker that had an allies and everything else. And I'm watching, sitting back, waiting for the fireworks and waiting for the explosion. You know what happened? Nothing. You know why? It was reasonable. Mm-hmm. Because of the harm and destruction they were able to articulate, because they took the bandwidth to do all these interviews, document all these interviews of what exactly was said on what dates and blah, blah, blah. And so this person could say all they want about how they're just doing X, Y, and Z, and they're just exercising good leadership and all that. Yeah. Well, look at the death and destruction you caused in all these people and how that then trickled on down to the things they're doing. Mm-hmm. You're removed. That's reasonable.
Oh, yeah. Having the paper trail, having the documentation, having all that is so critical. I guess it's in this case, could they have done it better? Could they have done it faster? Could they have done it more efficiently? And I think is what is the question here, because he had so many months to basically have his reign of terror before they finally said, let's get rid of this guy. And I can guarantee there were people there within that first week that said, this guy's got to go now.
Yeah.
But they their hands were tied, essentially, at least according to the policies that were at play at that moment in time. So if anything, hopefully at the end of the day, this is a bit more of a reality check for WSU and universities as a whole of how they handle these sort of things, how they have handled these sort of things, mm-hmm. and how they can improve on them going forward to weed out individuals like this sooner rather than later. Because there's a lot of these people out there.
I was just going to say, are there more festering in departments and they don't know what to do and don't know how to get rid of them?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Yep.
So hopefully this will make some sort of difference there. So I do applaud the Gonsalves for, continuing to go down this road. They don't have to. I mean, they could, you know, but they're doing what they believe is right. I this is a family of problem solving leaders. I was going to say I don't say social justice warriors because I don't think it's that, but just it's doing what's right.
Yeah.
In the name of their daughter that was so horribly wronged by that monster. So good for them for getting out there.
And they refuse doing what's right. to be victims by anyone.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
And that whole family is just a family of leaders. I mean, all of them, they're just going to do what's right. And it's for a greater good than by which they do it. So hats off to them. Yeah. They're doing phenomenal work for us all.
Well, and a without horrible a tragedy of what they went through, but look at what they are doing post, they are changing the world. They are changing the world in which they live.
Yep.
Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. This book is his latest, Unbreakable Alliances. Makes a lovely stocking stuffer, but if you have a wide stocking, I think
it would fit in there. Ones.
Or listen to the unaudible.
or stuff it in a turkey. Surprise the family.
That oh!
Way. Is this dressing?
In my books are turkeys.
Is this Nana's famous cranberry dressing? No, it's Robin's book, Unbreakable Alliances.
That's what
we're going to read this over Thanksgiving dinner rather than argue with each other.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Anyway, check that out wherever books are sold. It is definitely worth checking. And the audiobook, too, also available on Audible or wherever. All right. Until next time, for Todd, for Stacy, and Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.